Salam and good evening to you, worthy friend. Please, please, come closer.
Too close, a little too close.
Hello and welcome to episode 70 of the Disney Brit Podcast for Wednesday the 22nd of June. Thank you for joining us, and joining me as always is Juz. Hello, Juz.
Hello, Adam. Hello, Disney Poddy people.
And hello, Craig.
Hello. Though if you ping me tonight, I'm not actually sitting where I am. I'm in Switzerland.
You're in Switzerland?
Yeah, just so that you know.
Are you at your Swiss bank account?
No, actually, I'm not going to be in Switzerland. I'm going to move somewhere else. I'm going to go to Spain.
You're going to Spain.
Can you get me a turbo room first?
Okay, get to it. And who wants a watch while I'm there? Might as well.
Yeah, yeah. I want one of those purple cows, if you're in Switzerland.
Oh, the Milka?
Yeah.
Oh, now I'm hungry. That's now backfired completely.
What we're talking about, has it? See, it's just backfired entirely. We're here again. It's the last show for June before we move into July. So let's tell you what we've got going on this time. Got our usual news and rumours we're going to bring to you in a second. And then we haven't really brought you any audio from Mouse Meets yet, and bearing in mind Mouse Meets was the 30th of April and it's now nearly the 30th of June, so it was about time we brought you some of the stuff from there. So Catherine Ryan Howard, the author of the book Mousetrapped, she did a great talk for us while we were over there, did a bit of a reading from a book, talked about being in Orlando and working over there. So she's going to we're going to basically play the audio from her her talk. And also we
what if you're already there and this is like a repeat,
then you can fast forward.
If we did it in binaural,
yeah,
then you could play that in one ear and then something different in another ear, and then people could...
director's cut, we could kind of chip in.
Yes, you could have like, yes, this is talking now.
Or we could just not.
And we
just
let
it play on its own.
Other podcasts do things like binaural.
Yeah, but it
annoys me. We should have
binaural audio does my head in, because I listen to most of my podcasts in the car where my car speakers aren't binaural audio. So stop doing binaural audio, people.
I've got around that. I wear headphones now in the car. I can't hear people shouting at me and screaming at me. But I get the full effect.
But I just get the nice sound throughout the entire car otherwise. But binaural audio doesn't work for me. I'm not happy. Anyway, where are we? Mousetrapped. And then we also did Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, which was our version of the very
did what?
Television. A game show called Who Wants to Be a Millionaire?
Oh, right.
Which is
just like Millionaire.
Like Millionaire, but we were clever with the wording.
A copy of it.
Other game shows are also available. And we've got...
What are the game shows?
I don't know.
Play your Disney Cards Right.
Play Disney Cards Right. We did do that.
That's not play on words.
And also, Disney Tune.
That's still not a play on words.
I don't care. But we did that, and we're going to bring you one of the rounds of that as well, so you can hear how that went and listen to Craig's wonderful pushing of buttons for sound effects.
I was good at that.
It's very funny. And then that's pretty much the whole show. So should we do some news?
If you want.
Good morning, sire.
Good morning, Zazu.
Checking in with the morning report.
Fire away.
Let's start off then with some announcements that are coming out of California, which is to do with the Disney Legends ceremony that's going to be happening at D23 this year. And they've announced over on the D23 website who are going to be receiving these new Legend Awards. So I'm going to give you the name, and you've got to tell me whether you know who these people are, right? Some are quite obvious, some you will have absolutely no idea whatsoever. So we're going to start off with the first one. Jodie Benson.
Yes.
Yes.
She's famous for...
You just said you've got to say who we know who they are. We said yes.
Who's she famous? What's she famous for?
Singer. Wasn't she Tangled?
She was not
Tap
Tangled.
Dancer.
She She was Ariel in The Little Mermaid, as well as all the sequels. She also appeared in Enchanted and was the voice of Barbie in Toy Story 2 and Toy Story 3.
And she had her own cooking show in the late 80s.
And she was in Flubber as well.
She was the Flubber.
She was. She looks all right. Barton Beau Boyd.
Yes.
Who is it? You don't know Google aloud.
It's Barton Gogoid, if he's going to pronounce it correctly.
How is it?
Barton... the stories I could tell you about Barty.
You don't know, do you?
No, he was a... He drew some stuff.
Mm.
As well as he used to make other things as well.
Do you know, you are so close.
Because I know, me and Barty used to...
What with him being the assistant merchandising supervisor at Disneyland and then in 1997 being named the chairman of the Disney Consumer Products Group. Yeah, you're really close.
No, can I point out that you're just looking at his commercial aspects. I was looking at his, the stuff he drew from me and Dunks hobbies. Was amazing.
Right, okay. Jim Henson.
Yes.
He's a Muppet. Yeah.
He is a Muppet. Never speak we always of said the dead. Was a Muppet.
Jim Henson's getting one. Linda Larkin.
Can I just say it always bothered me, Jim Henson, that he died. I don't know why.
Well, that he died?
Yeah, I don't know why. It's because, you know, Muppets and it's like, oh, just cast them and they died. Just one of those silly things that bother me.
She was Princess Yasmin or Princess...
She was.
No, she was Yasmin, she wasn't
was
she?
Princess Jasmine, yeah, in Aladdin. Paige O'Hara, I've met Paige.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, we got an autograph. We sold it at Mouse Meat. She was someone else.
She was Belle in Beauty and the Beast. You are useless. She was also in Enchanted as well and has appeared in Kingdom Hearts as Belle in the 64th Annual Awards Academy Awards. Regis Philbin.
Yes, he is a presenter.
He is a presenter.
On TV.
I'm impressed. We're getting there.
ABC.
Yes, he is. He's quite old, bless him.
With Kelly.
Live with Red Regis and Kelly on...
We whipped it off with that other fella, Des O'Connor, and that woman-y.
That's right, we did.
Oh, Melanie, what a...
Do you mind me and Craig talking
to you? Sorry, do you want me to go? I'll come back.
Would you mind,
awfully? Yeah, be nice. Melanie Sykes, that was
it. Yeah. Oh, look, your listening figures are shot up already now, Adam's gone.
It'd be better if me and you was on there with Cameron Diaz and Kylie Minogue. That'd be a full show.
Oh, wow, yeah.
That'd be great. Yeah, Cameron.
Okay, I'm back now, just because it's starting to get a bit dodgy.
Oh, listen to the biggest drop down.
Regis Philbin also did Who Wants to Be a Millionaire on ABC as well. Jack and Benita Ratha.
Yep. They were costume designers.
They were friends with Walt Disney in 1954 to help build a luxury family hotel on property adjacent to Disneyland in Anaheim, California.
I was going to say, can you spell their names next time? It'd be easier.
Okay. The Disneyland Hotel, basically, are involved in. Anika Noni Rose.
Yeah, spell that.
She was the voice of Tiana in Princess and the Frog. I think she's quite an early one to get that.
I thought that was a bit cheeky.
You know, a lot of the others have done quite a lot, and she sort of has just done one film, and they've gone, yeah, you'll do. Did it make them lots of money? How cynical are we?
I wasn't ever impressed.
I liked it. It was a good film.
No, wasn't ever impressed.
You haven't watched it.
I have.
Oh, you have watched it?
Yeah.
Great.
I was a little bit...
Right. So how about she gets one, but people like Tom Hanks and his brother that does the voice for Woody Dolls didn't get one?
Bob Hanks?
Yeah.
Yes.
Jeff Hanks, isn't it? His brother?
Harry Hanks.
I don't know who it is. It's Mr. Hanks. Leah Salonga.
Oh, that name rings a bell. Leah Salonga. I like the name Salonga.
Well, she was basically the singing voice of both Jasmine and Mulan.
Mulan, of course.
She also appeared in Miss Saigon as well. She was quite famous for being in Miss Saigon. Ray Watson was the... I'm just going to give you this. President of the Irvine Company. He was asked to join the board of directors at Walt Disney Pictures in 1973. And he oversaw expansions of things like River Country, opening of Epcot, all those sorts of things.
Well. Yeah, he's also the board of supervisors in Kent County, California, representing the 4th District.
You are good.
Look at him, that was good. And finally, Guy Williams.
Yes, I know Guy.
He was an actor who appeared in Zorro.
Sign of
Zorro and Zorro the Avenger.
He was the horse.
He was Zorro.
The back end of the horse, apparently. Do you know who Mel Shaw is?
Mel Shaw?
Yeah.
No.
Well, isn't that funny? Because he's a legend, inducted in 2004. See how hard it is the other way round, Mr. Good. When you don't have the funny list there. Yeah,
the difference is, I didn't try. I just said no. No, there you go. That's all the legends. Yeah, you can see pictures and stuff of them all over on Disney.
Pictures and stuff.
Yeah, pictures and stuff. Right, let's move on to Juz then. We're going to go over to Walt Disney World now, and we're looking at another opportunity for free dining.
Yeah, we're going to ping our way across to free dining now. This gets me goat. For a limited time, you get a free dining plan when you buy the new Walt Disney Company's Memories Vacation Package. That's a mouthful. Yeah. For 5 nights, 6 days at select Walt Disney resorts. Bet it's not the cheap ones. For arrivals, that sounded slightly camp, didn't it? But it's not the cheap ones. For arrivals, most nights between August the 28th and September the 24th. Everyone's back at school. That's really great for UK. The package includes room, theme park tickets, and a 20-page photo pass photo book to share your memories. It's outside UK school holidays. Doesn't benefit anyone. If you want a photo book, just go to Walmart and buy yourself a book and stick your own photos in it. Of no benefit other than to push their sales up when they start hitting the quieter time before Halloween. Yes. So I must be grumpy there. But the dates got me because I thought, wow, that looks good. And then I looked at the dates and thought, that's pointless. Absolutely pointless for people with kids.
Yeah, you see, I'm with you on this as well. You know, it's a nice idea, but it's just the wrong time of year, certainly for us. It's not going to be for a lot of people. Plus, I suppose it's more aimed towards the US than it is the UK, isn't it?
Even US people are back at school, though.
Yeah, that's true.
Aimed at people.
They do get back early.
Kids.
Yeah, so we don't like it because it's aimed at people.
This is kiddist.
Kiddist.
Yeah.
Okay.
I just don't think it's on. In fact, what it's doing is encouraging people to take kids out of the school, and then they don't get an education, and then America does not produce to be the great empire it used to be, and it will flounder, and China will take over, all because of Disney.
Right. There we go. That's your point of view. I give this next piece of news to Craig because I thought you might be quite interested in this one, which is there were some role swaps at Disney.
It was actually, and it's quite nice that these are two people at Disney that I actually know, both of them, and I've spoken to and met. So, vice presidents, the way Disney organises itself, that it has, you know, its president of Walt Disney World, we all know, is Meg Crofton, and then each of the park and the areas like hotels and vending and merchandise have their own vice president.
Yeah.
Well, the park vice presidents are kind of, I suppose, the rising stars within the organisation. And the two that I know, I don't know who it is for the Magic Kingdom, but the two that I knew was the vice president for Hollywood Studios is a very nice gentleman by the name of Rylus Carter, who I've met a number of times and spoken to. And then the vice president for Epcot is somebody you'll recognise the name of, Daniel Cockrell. Mm-hmm. Yes, son of friend of the show Lee, who I've also met very quickly just to say hello to outside the Eat to the Beat concert when Boyz II Men were on. He walked past and I said hello and know your dad, and he looked at me like I was an idiot. But Rylus, I do know. But actually, Disney is swapping them over. So Rylus is going to become the VP of Epcot, and Dan is going to become the VP of Hollywood Studios. And I did actually send a note to Rylus today and got an email back, but he wouldn't give him much away.
Please stop bothering me.
Why are you still bothering me? Go away, leave me alone.
What's going on? No, he was very nice. He asked how the children were. He remembered. So we don't know why. I don't know why they're doing it. They get.
Do you think one's a step up and one's a step down?
You see, I had this thought as well, because obviously Hollywood Studios is so much smaller, but there's also a lot going on there at the moment, and I wonder whether, because it's not as if they've been in charge of the parks for that long, was it? I think Rylus Carter was 2008, Dan Cockrell was 2009, wasn't it?
Yeah, late end of 2009.
Yeah,
as well.
So we're not talking about they've been there a huge amount of time, but I just wonder whether it's the idea of a change around. Rylus Carter maybe wants something a little bit bigger, and maybe they've got plans that Dan Cockrell's going to be really good to do this or that. I think it's just Disney's way of just freshening things up a little bit, isn't it?
Yes. Good news. It'd be interesting to see what they do.
At least they're not putting a money man in charge of the ideas. Oh, sorry, that's Tom Staggs.
But Duffy Bear's now in charge of everything.
Oh, we've got that as news.
Well, the Duffy Bear's now in charge of everything.
No, about the Paris bit. Or someone winding me up the other day by saying that on Facebook.
What's that?
They said that Duffy Bear's going to Disneyland Paris.
Oh, I haven't seen. Well,
basically, it was on someone's Facebook, and I was horrified.
There was a big character thing that happened over at Disneyland Paris last week, where they brought out loads of rare different characters. I think it's Character Central Photos, I think it is, or Disney character photos, something like that, Facebook group, where they brought out so many characters people have never seen before. And one of the characters that came out was Duffy Bear. Now, we don't know whether this means Duffy's definitely coming or not. But we'll see, I suppose. I kind of hope that he's not going to appear. And I hope they're going to keep
him. I'm going to boycott the park. I think Duffy is disgusting. It's just a moneymaker that I don't even see fits into the parks in any way, shape or form.
Okay. I don't know. It's the Disney Character Central is the one to head over to. They've got a load of photos on there from Disneyland Paris. And they've also got a load of photos as well from California for some of the things that happened. But they had some cool Disneyland Paris ones. They had Max and Goofy there. They had some of the Bugs Life characters that we haven't seen for a while. They had a load of Stitch characters. They're apparently going to be doing some new Hawaiian party.
Leftover from that dance thing we went to see.
Yeah, that's probably what it was. But it's got like Experiment 627, 628. It's got Angel in there. It's got all of those sort of different characters. There is, though, a photo there of Mickey and Minnie dressed in their sort of French outfit. And there is a Duffy Bear there also dressed in his beret and red and white striped top. It may just be a once appearance. I'm kind of hoping Duffy isn't going to appear, but I would expect that he probably will, because he's making people money everywhere else, isn't he?
See, I bet you got to anyone you know who's going away to Disney,
yeah,
and you show a load of pictures of characters that no more, show them Duffy, and they have no recollection of who it is.
Yeah,
it's only because
true.
We've talked about it, and people who listen to podcasts and stuff are into it, knows what stupid concept of the stupid story is involved in it. Anyone else who's got a clue, it's just a teddy.
Yeah, true. It is just a teddy and it's nothing exciting. We've got little Charlie Bear in our house now, and little Charlie Bear is cool, and I prefer him much more than I do.
What's Charlie Bear?
And little Charlie Bear is a BBC, CBeebies program, I think it is. Much cooler than Duffy will ever be.
But then, you take him on holiday.
Yeah, I take him on holiday. I just don't take Harry. But Harry doesn't mind. He loves staying at home on his own. What are you on about?
With the cat.
Yeah, with a bear. Right, let's move on to Epcot, where we're going to be talking about the Innoventions exhibit, which is Don't Waste It, has now finally closed. You know that one, you get your sort of miniature dumper truck and you go around and you work on all your recycling rubbish, that sort of stuff. Well, we know it's definitely gone. Construction walls have gone up and there's going to be something replacing it, which apparently is called Habit Heroes. Now, we don't really know much about what Habit Heroes is. We had a good search on the internet for things. The nearest we could find was something called Habitat Heroes, which seems to be themed to saving the planet. What it does seem is that it's going to be an interactive, immersive video game style attraction that's going to be open for all ages. We haven't got an official opening time or opening date for it, but also apparently happening at the same time is going to be the House of Innoventions is expected to make a re-debut, I suppose. It's been closed for a couple of years. I'm sort of glad to see that this is coming back, because I really like House of Innoventions, and I was disappointed it wasn't open on my last visit. I'm sort of glad that they brought it back now.
Well, I think it's been a sort of, because of declines in sort of sales, etc., they needed that sponsorship to come back in and put new stuff in there. It was starting to look like a house of yesterday, wasn't it?
Who is it exactly who sponsors it? I can't remember now. I know it used to be...
whose phone's that?
That's my phone. I apologise. I'll get rid of it. I know.
Whose phone's
that? Isn't it? It's Rylos Carter ringing to ask whether I want a job. Was it Microsoft that co-sponsored it? I can't remember, you know.
Yeah, you just have to keep rebooting the house as you walk round.
I know.
It was all working fine until they took over.
Imagine an Apple House of Innoventions.
See, Apple House of Innoventions would be cool, except for they don't make stuff that you can actually use when you...
Yet. They'll take over the world yet.
Yeah, they'll take over the world, that's fine. I can't remember who sponsored it. If you do know, let us know.
You have Cisco.
I'm trying to sort of find out who it was who sponsored it.
All you wanted, major manufacturers, all of them come in with their own stuff and say, look, make this house the most awesome house you could make it. And people, they just do it and they go, and make sure, you know what you do? Make sure it's all American.
Yeah.
And not American China built, or American and a more American built.
That would be cool.
And we should do that in the UK as well. A British house with a British built stuff.
Okay.
So you won't be able to build a house and you won't be able to actually get anything in it.
Yeah, you wouldn't get planning permission. Definitely not. Right, okay, there we go. So those two things are coming. Juz, your favourite topic, food.
Yes, it's, I don't know if you heard of this, guys, it's Epcot International Food and Wine Festival. It's a new thing that's happening over at Epcot-y. Themed. You
know, I hope people who are sort of new to listening, going to Disney, don't listen to our podcast and take Judd seriously. Otherwise, they're going to have no clue what's going on. There's a new park. Yeah, it's just open. You can use your Disney ticket. It's called Universal Studios.
I thought that was the news later in this.
Oh, sorry.
You're doing it now?
Yeah, I've ruined it.
Anyway, this brand new festival at Epcot, International Food and Wine Festival. Actually, it's called the International Food and Sensible Drinking, if you are drinking at all, but make sure you don't drive festival. It's called Passport to the World of Flavours. Okay, it starts on September the 30th, straight through to November the 13th. I'm sure Dunks will be there at some time.
Oh, no doubt.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Again, I'll be around there. It's prices at $3 to $8. Beer and wine and cocktails are sort of to go with it, but they cost probably equal amounts of that. So, what's new this year? We have Hawaii, the Caribbean Islands, and Portugal all debuting themselves in the marketplace.
Aloha.
I can't get any of these right. Kalawao pork sliders in Hawaii. Sliders basically is a small bun with pork in it. Ropa Viaja in Caribbean.
Ropey what?
Ropey Vijaja.
Be careful.
Don't even bother ordering that one. Or just point. That one. And calamari salad in Portugal. I hate calamari.
Oh, so do I.
Why don't you just get a load of elastic bands, cover them in batter, and drop them in a deep fat fryer? Same thing.
And they tell everyone they're onion rings, and you take a bite and go, no, they're not.
I'm still chewing it 4 weeks later.
It's great for your job. Calamari doesn't really float my boat at all.
I don't know how people can eat it and swallow it.
I don't know. It's wrong, isn't it?
It's just not right. Anyway, the new Odyssey Lounge opens where guests can check in with family and friends back home, play games and surf the web while enjoying a cocktail or glass of wine or beer. That's what you're like, I'm missing this so much. And there's a charging station for mobile phones and other electronic devices. So take your little car down there, electric car, what's it called?
C5.
Yeah. I was thinking more of the posh ones these days. Oh, not talking 80s. The celeb chefs are back, of course, with Jeff Henderson, Kat Cora, who befriended me on Iron Orlando, and I didn't have to be the friend first. Alec Wong, Gail Gand, Suvi Sajar, Jamie Dean. James Dean. What Carper.
Selena Tune, obviously.
And more. You're looking rough. Ah, be quiet. Shh. More than 270 chefs in all will participate. This is absolutely awesome. There's also Eat to the Beat concert series back at America Pavilion. But yeah, I mean, Dunks goes around this and he phones us up and he rubs us in every year, even though it's the first year it's ever happening. And this is my dream. This is one thing I've got to get to before I get run over by a bus.
Just hope it doesn't happen in the parking lot on the way in. That'd be disappointing, wouldn't it?
I drive myself.
You drive yourself.
Drag my fingernails.
Okay, drag yourself there. Right, there we go. Enough about food and wine, then. That's all lovely. Let's move on to the Magic Kingdom, then, where there's some new expansion concept art been released.
There is, and this, you confuse me on this on Disney Brit, because the new one is the top one, and the bottom picture is the old one, and it took me
that
a while
really
to
helps on the podcast.
Well, this is great news. But okay, right, so Disney put their prices up because they're having to rejig a few of their plans.
Yeah.
And so they're using that money to do some nice colour drawings, which I'd rather have they kept the price down. But anyway, they have released more concept art of the Storybook Circus area, which I think is where the old Toontown was. Adam will tell me if I'm wrong, because he would like to do that. And there's been lots of details released, about the Fantasyland Forest expansion, with some behind-the-scenes posts on the Disney Park blog. But there's no need to go to the Disney Park blog and look at them. You go over to DisneyBrit.com, the best unofficial Disney site that there is, and you can have a look there. Now, if you go over there, there are two quite beautiful drawings. The bottom one is the original drawing, which it kind of looks nice, but it's very symmetrical. So you basically have a great big orange circus tent, and then you have the two Dumbo flying elephants, because you've got dueling Dumbos, haven't you, either side.
You will have.
And there's quite an ornate fountain in the middle, which is just going to have kids running through getting wet. The new concept is actually a much nicer design, I think. They seem to have shrunk down the circus tent dueling dragons Julian Dragons, Julian Gumbo area, flipped it over to kind of the right-hand side, and then on the left-hand side put this really cool blue circus tent with some other kind of tents off it, which are going to have merchandise and stores and everything under the circus tent. A really cool idea. Also, it looks like the Barnstormer has kind of stayed in the same place. Now, it looks a lot greener as well. There seems to be a lot more kind of foresty things put in, which I don't know if that's a kind of takeoff from the film. It's based around the film Dumbo, this area. And there's also kind of a train ride that comes in. And I think it's, was it called Casey Jr.? I can't remember.
Casey Jr.'s train.
There we go. Which was the train from Dumbo, wasn't it?
Yes.
So there we go. So I'm not a complete idiot, not knowing Pedro O'Hara. So anyway, have a look at Disney's book. You'll see how they've done it. And what gets me, though, about this is I don't quite understand why, you know, they plan it and there must be thousands of people looking at it, planning it, and then they change it.
It's called budget, I would guess.
Well, they've put the budget out because the prices have gone up. They've got more money. So it looks like they're doing more in the new one than in the old one.
That's true. It does seem to be, but a lot of the tents that were originally there for Toontown seem to be taken down. There seems to be the ones that were originally coming over on the left-hand side. I'm not quite sure they reduced them in number or not, but they certainly seem to be a little bit different to what they were. The thing is, yeah, you're right, and I sort of didn't put the price increase into the news for Disney Brit, really, because it's more of an American thing rather than an English thing. I didn't think people would necessarily want to hear about that much.
What price is going up?
It doesn't seem to be at the moment. Ours usually go up August sort of time, but we haven't heard anything at all about them going up. And certainly the website and all of the sort of travel agent brochures are saying that you can still get the tickets at this price.
Is there a time limit? Could I buy them now and keep holding for them?
No, they're only valid for 2010 prices, 2010, 2011, 2011, etc. Do you think this is due to budget constraints, due to timing constraints? Have they suddenly realised that they're trying to build too much or too little? Or I don't really know.
No, I don't know. I mean, from looking at the pictures, it looks like they've put more in because you've got these tents now. All right, you've lost the fountain, but you know that's just a Charlie Dimmock water feature. There's nothing special about that.
You've got the kids' play area now, haven't you? Which is that water bit there, which is going to be directly in front of what we now know is definitely going to be the Fantasyland train station. So Fantasyland are definitely getting their train station now. But it just seems that things have moved round slightly. You know, Casey Jr. seemed to be just a train at the side of a track. It's now become that water play area. The Dumbos seem to be in exactly the same place. Apparently they're getting a new look now, which could be similar to what we've got in Disneyland Paris, with a lot more water, that sort of stuff, because it's now not over utility or they can do that. You've got obviously that Dumbo fountain and things there as well, which does just seem like a big waste of space if it's really just going to be a big fountain. Although if it's going to be similar to what we had at the Imagination Pavilion, where people can jump up and hit the water and all that sort of stuff, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what it looks like when they finally finish it and whether it's going to be as good as they think they're saying it was going to be. I don't know. We'll see. Mm-hmm. Right, talking about moving on and expansions and to technology, this is one that I wanted to share with you that I think Juz will probably be interested in, being our proper technological guy. Something called motion.
Not as good techie as other people, though, no, mate. I know
true.
My place.
That is true. We know that Disney are always trying to push those boundaries for technology, and they have, you know, over the past 10 years, we've had Pal Mickeys, we've had testing DS park guides, Kim Possible, even Verizon's Mobile Magic, all that sort of stuff. Well, Walt Disney Research in Pittsburgh I've been working on something called Motion Beam. Let me explain to you what Motion Beam is. According to the website, what Motion Beam is, it says the vision of augmented reality is to seamlessly merge virtual content into the physical world. Typical approaches to AR make use of intermediary displays through which the user views the augmented environment. Handheld projectors have the advantage of situating virtual content side by side with physical objects in almost any space. Their size also allows users to grasp them in a single hand, attach them to their bodies, and move them from space to space. And this is this new technology Disney have come up with. Go to, say, DisneyBrit.com. You can search for Motion Beam. You'll see a video on there showing you exactly how this works. And the way they're doing it at the minute, they have a handheld projector with what is an iPod Touch attached to the top of it. And they can turn the projector. They can use motion to move a character around on a wall. Also, there's certain points of which there's sort of infrared technology where if it the projection passes over something, it knocks something off a wall or something, affects something somewhere or another. And we've been talking about how they're going to come up with this new technology and begin to implement this new technology. And it seems that motion beam could be the next step. If you want to know more, go to DisneyBrit.com, go and look on the videos over there. But you can find out more at motion-beam.com. And also there's a link to the motion beam paper on Disney Brit as well. Have you guys had a chance to see it? Look at this.
Nope.
Yeah, it was a brief look, yeah.
What do you think? Is it something that's doable? Is it something that'll take off?
Yeah, do you know, at the back of my mind, I keep saying keep moving forward. Do you know, I look at a lot of these and wonder how long before someone comes up with a bad idea of replacing animatronics. Mm. And that all goes. And then, you know, my kids... We'll look at, you know, videos of Pirates of the Caribbean and laugh their heads off at how stupid all the people look. And that's the way we're going, because at the end of the day, the more technology that's coming in, the cheaper it is to replace and change these rides. Toy Story Mania, new games, rides completely different, change, you know. Even, you know, Haunted Mansion now, you can change that bit with the ghosts involved. Yeah. From a Disney's perspective, this is incredibly cheap. A lot of money up front. But after that, you can completely... you could change a ride from being one thing to change the fascia outside to something else. And let's look at projection fascias as well, which they've done very well with the castle. Okay, we hate it. But the projection fascias, if you ever look at them, some of the buildings they demolish via projection fascia and stuff like that, is incredible. So we're getting to a stage now where nothing really needs to be what it looks like anymore, and that's sad.
Well, you imagine some new attraction, though, where... you're in your vehicle and you have this handheld projector, and by scanning around a Disney character onto something, it makes this happen or makes that happen, or, you know, and there's all that interactive element. I suppose Toy Story Mania style idea, but we've got another added element to it. Do you not think that would be amazing as an attraction?
I think the whole thing's amazing, but what you'll get is a completely different theme park than you've got now.
Yeah, that's, you know, you don't want every attraction to go that way, but it would
It will happen, because of cost-wise.
Possibly. Craig, what do you think?
I think you should just leave it alone, because what's going to happen is you'll change it, and then there'll be an anniversary, and then you'll change it back again because there's a fire. It's like everything else, it's in fashion, it will go around, they'll change it all, and then we want the retro stuff back, and then they'll change it all back again. And do you know what, they've worked, it's worked 40 years, some of them, so just leave them alone. If you don't like it, go to Busch Gardens.
That will be the fifth park will be
an augmented reality thing.
No, it'd be a retro park where you take all the rides that we whinge about and put them in there.
Yeah.
So we'll all go there while our kids go to something else and have handheld and zippity-doo-dahs.
But do you think Disney follow the trends, though? They've always been ahead of the game, have they not, in the things that they bring in and the things that they do? You know, they create a lot of new technology like this. And rather than sort of sticking with one thing, they do, you know, they're not stuck with Pal Mickey. They gave it a go, they moved on, they tried something else. So you think that Disney are going to keep creating this technology, and eventually it's just going to become a big technological park? Is that your thoughts?
Mine?
Yeah.
Well, put it this way, if you could build a building which has no fascia on it whatsoever, and you use a projector to project the whole fascia on that, that's a cheap thing. You can make it 3D as well. It's augmented slightly.
Yeah.
There's that. Inside, you know, you could start doing stuff like they've done with the Haunted Mansion, with the mirrors and the projection and all the sort of the beams and everything, you interact. You know, how cheap is that to go, do you know what, we've got a new movie coming out. As part of that movie, I want to just make these extra bits for this ride. Click a button, it's all changed. It's now, you know, whatever film has changed that ride.
But what happens when it breaks down and you're just left with a concrete building?
Yeah, but do you think Disney...
You reboot it.
Do you think Disney are cheap? Reboot the whole building. Do you think Disney are cheap like that and would just create something that had blank walls? Do they not?
It's not cheap. It'd be pushed by the public.
Would it not be themed, though, you know, no. So that it interacted with the environment? It
doesn't need to be, because everything would be themed by that technology. And Disney are, as you quite rightly said, without a shadow of doubt, the company that is at the cutting edge and pushing us all the time. So they'd be the first to put it in and go, look at this. And we'd go, wow. And they'd go, do you know, from a shareholder point of view, let's be honest, Disney don't really care about any of us. Disney care about shareholders. And that's the globalization of the marketplace at the moment. We've got no choice about that.
Don't love me.
Get that money in.
No, they just want your money, Craig.
And they proved that when they got rid of thingy with me.
But I don't know.
BMK. I must admit,
VMK was a mistake, I think, them getting rid of that. But I don't know, I just don't see Disney building a ride with blank walls. This projection system is only small. You know, we're not covering an entire wall with these projectors. We're covering a small part of a wall here or there. But yeah, it is a start. I don't know, you know, somebody's sitting there looking for the tilt and focus button on it to try.
Well, you look at the Phantom Manor, yeah?
Yeah.
The Haunted Manor. You yourself and I have said it is amazing what they've done now.
Yes, it is.
Because as fans, we've said it's amazing. From their perspective, it's something they can change quite quickly.
Hmm. Yeah, I suppose there is that. I suppose we'll see. I kind of hope they're not going to go the way of we create the attraction. That would be really sad to see because Disney's so good at doing that. But, you know, give it 15, 20 years. Let's see what happens.
We'll have to go there soon. We could do it in the house.
Yeah, that's
You'll
true.
Buy the Disney attraction vacation in your own house.
You just sit at home for a week.
Well, the prime example now, I mean, what the predicted this year, 2.5 million of us Brits will not be going on any vacation. No stay vacations, no going on vacations this year, because it's finally bitten in that we do not have the money to do anything. 2.5 million that went last year are not going this year. So how do you get them? You need to push something into their house to get them to do something internally in their house, and that's the future.
Well, I must admit, you know, I'm in quite a sad position at the moment, and we've just been pricing up trips to Disney for 2012 to go out for 40th, and even for us it's starting to look very expensive. You know, a lot of money. It's
Virgin have ruined it for us, though.
It's because we're trying to take Harry. That's the problem. I don't have to leave him at home. It's just becoming very, very expensive. And we're just saying, actually, you know, we want to go 2013. Are we going to be able to afford 2012 and 2013? And because of the basically the airline companies, it's becoming too expensive to do it, which is a real shame. But
so me and you need a pedalo.
We need a pedalo. If we start now, we might make it in time for the 40th anniversary.
Cool.
But Disney do bring things over here, as you were saying, and this next news item is a case in point, I think.
Oh, I want to sound so enthusiastic, Mr. Goodgood. I really do. They bring things over here, and it's just this. On the 2nd of October 2011, or 2011 as us kids say, a ceremony will be held in the grounds of Kensington Palace. Are you getting excited, Adam?
Oh, I am.
A ceremony, okay. And what's this ceremony for?
It's for Rapunzel.
It is indeed. The Disney princess are being accepted into royalty. And there's how they're going to do this. It's actually being held in the UK. So it's at Kensington Palace on 2nd October 2011. According to Disney Parks blog, all the Disney princess characters will be there, joined by VIP celebrities, no Adam, and little princesses from around the globe. The festival will include a procession through Hyde Park, park activities, and an amazing welcoming ceremony. Are they tying this into the new shop as well, do you think?
I don't know, to be totally honest with you. There is no space in the new store for a meet and greet. It's not big enough.
They must do something with this, because they brought it down here. There must be a reason they're doing it.
I was trying to work out the reason why they've done it, other than obviously being royalty, and they're not having royalty necessarily. They don't have royalty in the US, and they wanted it as a regal occasion, so they brought it over to the UK to do it here. But it does seem an interesting choice of place. I do find it a little bit cynical, and I'm not saying that it's not nice to see it, but it's like they've waited until they've checked Rapunzel's successful before they allow her to become a princess. You know, do you know what I mean? It's like, yeah, Tiara.
I just don't get it. I'm sorry, donks might put me right. I just do not. I look at this and I go, I just don't get it. I'm sorry.
Have you seen the film?
No.
All right, so that might have something to do with it.
No, but I don't get why they're doing it. I can't see the point of it.
I can see exactly the point of it, because they can suddenly sell her as another princess, you know.
Is the DVDs you out then?
The DVD's out.
Oh. It's a vinylmation of her coming out then.
I don't know. I don't think there's a vinylmation at all. I would guess.
I'd rather have Mickey.
I would guess Mickey will probably be there, to be honest. I would guess it's probably just something, you know, a little more high profile in this country. It's going to be seen in the US as well, because they're going to cover it on the parks block, all that sort of stuff. But, it, you know, we had last Christmas, we had the light switch on in Swindon, we had the Twinning Town, that hasn't happened again this year. So maybe this is just like another marketing ploy, something a little bit different. And who knows, maybe there is something Tangled that's coming. But hopefully we'll get an invite, we'll get to go and enjoy it and go and see what's going on and enjoy all the stuff that's going on in Hyde Park as well. It would be nice to find out why they're doing it. At the moment we don't really know, but
All I'd want is a D23 subscription to be over here without the high price of shipping.
That would be nice.
That's all I want.
Yeah,
they do that, and you've got so many fans who listen to our podcast and the other podcast going, man, you know, your marketplace is ready to boom here. Just give us a chance.
Yeah, I'd love to have a D23 subscription, but I'm not paying the 50-odd pounds it is for shipping. Yeah. In fact, I got to hold the other day, and this is quite exciting. I have to thank Mark for this. I got to hold a Premier Annual Pass, the pass for both the Walt Disney World and Disneyland. It was amazing, even for a few seconds.
You see, that would have been me who'd gone, oh, and I go, come back and go, what back?
He didn't give me anything.
Yeah.
Finders, keepers, losers, weepers.
But we'll find out what that's all about, and we'll keep you updated if we know more. Well, that is all of the news.
Woohoo!
Oh, that was just delayed.
Do it again.
Matter any. No, it's fine.
No, okay. Do it again.
That's
again.
All of the news.
Woohoo!
There we go, that's better. Right, we'll move on then very quickly to what is the next sort of part of the show. We had the pleasure of meeting Catherine Ryan Howard. She came to Mouse Meets this year, and she is the author of a book called Mouse Trapped. She went and worked out in Orlando for 18 months, worked at the, as she calls it, Duck and Tuna. And what she did, she came and did a presentation at Mouse Meets all about her experiences there, about her book. She did some readings from her book as well. And although there was a lot of people at Mouse Meets, there's still going to be a lot of people who haven't necessarily heard her talk, maybe haven't even heard of her book. So we thought we'd play the audio from her actual presentation for you to enjoy on the show right now. Right, this year Mouse Meets has truly gone international. Oh yes, well, we've gone to Ireland. Catherine here, has very, very kindly flown in from Ireland this morning. She's written a absolutely fantastic book. It's a book that I sort of found by accident when I was searching, when I put Disney into Kindle, as I do quite often, and then spend a small fortune. She's written a book called Mousetrapped, which is basically about her 18 months when she lived out in Orlando and worked at the, I've had this question three times, worked at the Duck and Tuna. So many people have gone, I've not stayed there, is it nice? Which is the Swan and Dolphin. She worked at the Swan and Dolphin for 18 months, and she's very kindly to come over to share her experiences, to read some of her books, take some questions, and to generally let us know about her 18 madcap months in Orlando. So please welcome Catherine.
Okay, I'm a bit short for this, I think. What I'm going to do is I'm going to just play a little slideshow of photographs from my time there. And then right after that is the book trailer, which has very exciting music that doesn't reflect the excitement of the book. Not that exciting. It's not. Low expectations are better because they rarely lead to disappointment. So then I'm going to read a little from the book, and then I'm going to talk about my experience. And then after that, if anyone has any questions, they can ask me, or if you want to buy a book, or you have a book and you want me to sign it, we'll do all that afterwards. So if Adam wants to play it. As I said, it's a bit less exciting. Can everyone hear me? Yeah, okay. Okay, so I'll just read a little bit of Mousetrapped first, and I'm going to read the bit where I arrive, because I'd never been to Walt Disney World before. I'd never been to Florida before. So I literally got off the plane with a suitcase and walked into this new life, which was kind of the problem. That's where the problem started. So I'll just read a little bit, won't be very long, and then I'll fill you in on what happened next. Okay. The air was hot and thick as I walked out of Orlando International Airport and into my new life as a Walt Disney World cast member. The hotel had sent a car to pick me up. Not only was this rather nice of them, but it helped me realise my lifelong dream of seeing someone in an arrivals hall holding up a sign with my name on it. In this case, that someone was Rob, a kindly grandfather type with whom I happily chatted on the short journey to the hotel. The ride wasn't very scenic, but I was mesmerised by my first glimpse of Florida. Boxy apartment buildings, vacant condominiums and monotonous mall clusters, all connected by miles and miles of unsightly power cables and framed by a bright blue sky. Every so often I even spotted the odd palm tree. I assumed we were on the outskirts of somewhere. I would spend the next 18 months searching fruitlessly for its centre. "Here we are," Rob announced after 20 minutes or so. "Those are the gates." Up ahead, the road ran beneath a set of purple arches, topped with multicoloured flags and a fairy tale castle. A sign read, "Walt Disney World, where dreams come true," while a story-high Mickey Mouse stood to one side, welcoming me with a smile and a wave of his white glove. As we crossed onto official Disney soil, a feeling that was either excitement or airplane food-induced nausea, or perhaps both, broke over me like a wave. "I'm really here," I thought. "This is actually happening." Beyond the gates, the road signs turned purple. One of them directed guests to the Epcot Resort's area where the duck and tuna, legal reasons, was listed as one of the hotels. As made up as it had sounded, the hotel actually did exist. That's a relief. As we came off an exit ramp and onto Buena Vista Drive, Rob pointed out that Epcot was just beyond the trees to our right. The only thing I could see was a sign for the park's backstage entrance. After a garage of Disney's emergency vehicles and a picturesque canal, Disney's MGM, as it was called then, Tower of Terror, suddenly loomed to our left. Across from it was my hotel. A majestic turquoise pyramid rose into the sky, dividing a lower rust-coloured building in two beneath it. It was flanked on either side by two enormous tuna fish, striking a haughty pose with their tails in the air. They're actually mahi-mahi dolphin fish. That was one of the number one questions we were asked at the hotel. Why don't they look like dolphins? That's why. In the foreground, closer to the road, a smaller, longer structure was painted the same colour but topped with two ducks. They seemed to be ignoring the tuna fish and each other. By the time Rob pulled up to the doors of the tuna wing of the hotel, I realised my face ached from smiling. Let the magic begin. Even if you're not an excitable, overly emotional and jet-lagged 24-year-old Irish girl whose dreams are coming true, the tuna lobby would still take your breath away. After Rob bade me goodbye and good luck and I'd convinced the valet that I could manage one suitcase on my own, I floated in the doors on a fluffy cloud of delirium. On the other side was a small foyer whose ceiling sparkled with hundreds of tiny twinkling stars, and beyond was the magnificent rotunda lobby. Later on, I would learn all sorts of things about this space. I would know how to direct guests to the convention area, the sweet shop, the concierge, the escalators, the Disney buses, the long way to the pool, the west elevators located somewhat confusingly behind the sign for the central elevators. I would always show the way with a two-fingered point because using one is considered rude in some cultures. I would come to think of this triple-height lobby as the hub connecting the hotel's various wings and spaces and home once a year to one of the weirdest Christmas trees you're likely to find on Disney property. The year I was there, it was pink and green leaves topped with a mirror ball. I'll just skip ahead to where I actually go into my room. Okay, so basically they gave me a room for 2 weeks, so I walk into the room. Up on the fifth floor, my room did indeed have a balcony. Unfortunately, it also faced onto another wing of the hotel, i.e. a wall. But if I turned to the left, I could see a slice of the lake, the lap pool at the dock, and the Tower of Terror, or a partial lake view in high-priced hotel language. But I could hardly complain, seeing as it was free, and I'd only be complaining to my future department. After I unpacked a few things, tried out the bed, and flipped through the TV channels, I grabbed some dollars and set off to explore. I managed to find the lobby again, on level 3 just to shake things up, and in it, the gift shop. As I'm physically incapable of passing by a good gift shop, I stopped inside to have a look. The smiling sales assistants wore lanyards adorned with colourful Disney trading pins and the same "you can approach me, I'll help you" expressions as everyone else. In the Swan and Dolphin, we weren't cast members, but of course they were cast members, true cast members, working in the Disney store. I left with just a copy of People magazine, which was more than enough excitement for me. I knew from my obsessive stalking of the hotel's website that the two wings were connected by a palm tree lined walkway that stretched across an inlet of a man-made lake. Opposite the front desk, escalators led down to ground level, so I hoped for the best and headed that way. In the minute it took me to walk from the gift shop to the rear doors, I passed by two elevator banks, a sweet shop, a piano, a coffee bar, a spa, and three restaurants. Four if you counted the one in the corner I could see but didn't technically pass. The sheer size of the complex was overwhelming. Combined, the hotel boasted 2,265 guest rooms, 8 restaurants, 2 cafes, 5 separate swimming pools, and 2 poolside eateries, a white sand lakeside beach, two gyms, a spa, two business centres, a 24-hour convenience store, and over 300,000 feet of dedicated convention space. Orientation was going to take forever. It did. Having located the doors, I walked outside into the Orlando evening and one of the most stunning man-made vistas I had ever seen. The waters of the lake were still, a perfect reflection of the hotel's idiosyncratic design shimmering on its surface. This mirror image was interrupted only by the walkway, lined with luscious palms and decorated with colourful flower beds. I walked halfway across before turning to look back at the five-tiered fountain of upturned shells that sat at the pyramid's base, the largest one held aloft by the tails of four two-dimensional tuna, while the water poured into the pond below. I don't know if you know the story of the swan and dolphin, but allegedly it's the dolphin is supposed to be a mountain, and the black glass that's in the middle of it, which some people think the monorail was supposed to go through, is the heart of the mountain, and the water comes down off the mountain across the walkway and splashes up against the swan, or so they told. At the other end of the walkway, I noticed in the distance a sign made entirely of light bulbs directing guests towards Disney's Boardwalk, my favourite place. The only person I'd ever met who had worked in Disney World was a girl called Claire, whom I knew from my time with Holiday Rick. She had been on the international programme stationed at the UK Pavilion and had told me that one of her favourite Disney places was a dueling piano bar called Jelly Rolls. I was pretty sure she had said it was on the Boardwalk, so I headed that way. You probably won't be shocked to learn that the Boardwalk, as the name suggests, is an actual boardwalk that sits on the shores of Crescent Lake. It's opposite Disney's yacht and beach clubs, and all three complexes have white clapboard facades reminiscent of an Atlantic coast seaside resort. Shops, restaurants and bars crowd the boardwalk's promenade amid twinkling fairy lights, flashing neon signage and piped jazz music. At the far end, a bridge leads to Epcot's International Gateway entrance, which deposits guests somewhere between the UK Pavilion's red telephone boxes and France's miniature La Tour Eiffel. As I stood there, the boardwalk seemed to enjoy a quiet, relaxed calm. There were no long lines, life-size cartoon characters or squabbling children. As the promenade's twinkling lights drizzled onto the lake below, the music played and boxes of saltwater taffy sat in store windows. I found myself nostalgic for a time I'd never... nostalgic for a place I'd never been to, and wistful for a simpler time which I was far too young to remember. I loved it. I passed the Atlantic Dance Hall, as much of a nightclub as the boardwalk's theme would allow, although, in the months that followed, the only people I ever saw doing any kind of Atlantic dance were the unfortunate cast members who manned the doors. They seemed contractually obligated to dance while on duty. They are, I believe. Next to it was the famed Jelly Rolls, silent and dark, a sign promised it would be opening shortly. When I came upon the Big River Grill and got a whiff of hot food, it suddenly occurred to me that somewhere beneath all this excitement, I was totally starving. "Only you?" the hostess asked, unable to keep the surprise out of her voice. Lone diners were apparently a rare sight in these parts. I took a table outside with an unobstructed view of the promenade and the lake beyond it, ordering a Coke because I was thirsty and a cocktail because I was celebrating. Smiling inside and out, I was struggling to process all that was happening. Was I really here? Was I actually in Disney World? By the time I finished my burger and ordered a second cocktail for dessert, it was almost 9 o'clock. With Florida lagging 5 hours behind Ireland, my body was under the impression it was almost 2 a.m, and I'd been up since 5. People magazine's celebrity cellulite photos were beginning to blur before my eyes, and so with my comfy bed reckoning, I asked for the check. Suddenly, there was a loud pop, and a blossom of gold unfurled in the sky. My waitress informed me that it was Illuminations, the laser show and fireworks display that closed nearby Epcot each evening. For the next 25 minutes, I sat open-mouthed as each batch of pyrotechnics outdid the one before, until the finale filled the sky with simultaneous explosions of colour and light and sparkle. I left with my dinner bill and a massive lump in my throat. There were magic in these moments. Not so long ago, I'd been stuck in Cork with a future so bleak I couldn't bear to look at it. It wasn't that bad, but you know, by comparison. But now it was as beautiful and bright as a night sky full of Disney fireworks. I had clearly inhaled my first batch of pixie dust and I was loving it. And I hadn't seen anything yet. I'd barely left the grounds of the hotel. On the walk back, I stood and looked at the tuna from its left side. Sounds so weird. The dolphin from its left side. 4 fingers stretched out into the lake, illuminating cup-shaped fountains atop each one. In the daylight, it was a stunning palace surreal against the sky. But at night, words failed. I leaned on the railing and took it in, or tried to. I wasn't sure what I'd done to deserve coming to a place like this, but it must have been something pretty good. This morning, I'd woken up in dull, dreary Ireland, only to have my Disney dream delivered to me by the end of the day. Standing at the foot of the hotel that night, I was probably as happy as I'd ever been. I had no idea that in a few short hours, my Disney bubble would be well and truly burst. Dum, dum, dum. Okay. Oh, thank you. Okay, so I'll just explain a little bit about what I did. I wanted to do the international program, which is when, I'm sure you know, you can go and work in one of Epcot's pavilions. But there's no Irish pavilion, despite what Americans think that the UK does for both of us. It does not. And you can't work there if you're from the Republic of Ireland. So that scuppered those plans. I wasn't in college, so I couldn't do any sort of graduate program or anything like that. So I got onto Yummy Jobs, who are a recruitment agency in London, and they are the regional recruiter for Disney here. And I told them my situation, and they said, look, we have this thing called a cultural resort program. And what you do is you go away for, it was a year and a half then, it's only a year now. You have to either be studying hospitality or prove that you have experience in the industry. Now, I did have experience in the industry, but like, you know, I think it was like 18 months. They were looking for 5 years. You know, make it work. So I applied and I thought, look, I'll end up somewhere in the States, you know, better than nothing. But I really wanted to go to Walt Disney World. I had this thing in my head forever about working at Walt Disney World. I just thought it'd be so cool and interesting. And when you say it to people, they're like, oh, you worked at Walt Disney World. All the sort of stuff. I'm very superficial. So I said, fine, you know, send me up, whatever. I'll end up in Colorado or something. And then one day, in May 2006, I got an email from the front desk manager of something called the Swan and Dolphin. Now, when I say the Swan and Dolphin, and probably, you know, a lot of you here have been to Orlando, you know, it doesn't sound that strange to us. But, like, if you've never heard of the Swan and Dolphin, you know, you're like, what is that? Is, you know, what could that possibly be? So I looked at the email and I saw down the end, in tiny print, Walt Disney World, and I was like, what? So basically, they were after getting me a position with Starwood Resorts, who owned the Swan and Dolphin, and operated thanks to Disney not being able to pay the bill for building Epcot. Tishman got the grounds that the Swan and Dolphin is built on, and the agreement was they could run it, but Disney had some say. So, like, we were called cast members, we had to use all the language, you know, we had to behave, we had to go to traditions, Disney orientation. So, we had to behave as if we were cast members when we didn't have any passes to the park or anything. But anyway, we got them once a year, you know, we had to be happy what we got. So, and we were paid a lot better, I should say as well, a lot better than Disney, Disney front desk agent. So I had a telephone interview, and I was in Holland at the time on another contract. So I had to wait until September to go. And a lot of people read this book and they say, why did you do this? Why did you go? You didn't research anything online. I couldn't drive, and if anyone here has been to Florida, they'll know that's basically, you know, just absolute nightmare. You know, people are kind of suspicious, and they say, like, you know, you must have done something. You know, I had nowhere to live or anything when I went over. I just went. And the reason is that when I went to Holland, literally, they send me my ticket. I get off at the train station. Someone meets me, brings me to my company accommodation. I was used to being handheld going abroad. So I thought this would be no different. It was completely different. And when I showed up, they were like, oh yeah, you can't start work until you get your social security number. And you can't apply for your social security number for a week and a half. And then after that, we'll see. So I was like, okay. So at the beginning, things got off to a bit of a rocky start. And the next morning is after I arrived is when I found out about my social security number. And I thought that maybe they'd help me find somewhere to live or something. But no, I was just on my own for that. So for the first few months, it was awful. And the reason I call the book Mousetrapped is because I couldn't afford to go into the parks. And I didn't have a car. So my whole world... How many of you have been to Orlando? How many have been to Walt Disney World? Hands. Okay, great. Do you know where the premium outlets are? That's where I used to live, near there. Not where the... Not Party Central, where the Disney cast members live, but just down the road. And I used to walk from there along the highway to the gates near Downtown Disney and into Marketplace. And then I would get a Disney shuttle bus intended for guests into work. And then I would get... It was great because I could cool down, actually, on the bus after walking in 90-degree heat for 40 minutes. then I would have to get a cab home at night. And on my days off, and of course now I met people and they were like, oh, we'll drive, you know, but I didn't want to do that. I was kind of pretending I was fine when I wasn't really. So I used to, on my days off then, I would walk back to Downtown Disney. And Downtown Disney was like my favourite place, because it's not now because we've lost the Virgin Megastore and everything else. But I used to just love, I used to spend hours in Westside. I'd be around Virgin Megastore and then I'd go to the movie, see two movies, pay for one. And I don't think, I had no money. Hello. So that was going on for months. And oh, and then I had Goodings as well, the crazily expensive supermarket opposite those gates at Downtown Disney. So that's why I called it Mousetrap, because for 3 months that was my entire world. My apartment, Downtown Disney, work, and Goodings. And then what happened, two things happened. I made a very good friend who was also a J1 student who had previously worked in the Germany Pavilion, and she taught me to drive and she brought me into the parks. So a big turning point for me was in November when I went into Magic Kingdom for the first time. Now, I'd been to Disneyland Paris and I had, of course, no idea really how different like the scale of it was. And that night, not to put too fine a point on it, I say Wishes is better than Prozac. Because that night, I still remember, Wishes is my favourite thing in the whole world, besides space shuttles. And that night, I was so, like, amazed, you know, looking around. We went to Epcot and Magic Kingdom, and it was like, I finally realised why I was there. I was after forgetting why I wanted to go work in Walt Disney World at all, because, of course, I wasn't even in any of the parks or anything. I was just seeing them from the outside and pretending I knew what I was talking about when guests were asking me questions. Oh my god, that was a great... I relied on the unofficial guide to Walt Disney World. That's the information I was giving them. Pretending I had been there all the time. You should have heard me about the Fast Pass. I was like the Fast Pass expert. I had never used a Fast Pass. I'd never even been in the park. So when I finally went in, I was like, this is actually why I came here. And Wishes that night, like, I'll actually cry if I talk about it. But I just really, like, it drove home for me why I wanted to work in Disney World. And it's because it really is a magical place. And, like, you know, people are so cynical and people don't like Disney, or people think, you know, it's so expensive and all this kind of thing. Really, though, if you just let it in, it is just the most fantastic place. And where else? I said it to myself so many times. I would be driving home from work. We finished work about 11. And during the summer, the Epcot fireworks would go off before I left work. And on my way home, I would have MGM on one side. And in the distance, I would have Wishes. And I could see that on my way home from work every night. And after I moved out of Vineland Avenue, I lived by SeaWorld as well. So then I'd go home and see the SeaWorld fireworks too. So where else can you do that? And like, where else, you know, are you getting your lunch and Goofy walks up? And one time, actually, I encountered a Goofy who kind of flashed us, but like, where do you see things like this? Where do you see things like this? Hopefully not very often, you don't see that. But to work in a place, and the thing is that in the Swan and Dolphin, we weren't 100% cast members, but everyone really did love Disney, and a lot of people had worked directly for Disney in previous jobs. And we were all so happy to be there. And the best thing was that when we worked front desk, I worked housekeeping as well, which I don't even want to talk about. But I worked front desk for a year. And when people arrive at Disney, they are so happy to be there. A lot of people have saved up for a very long time. And they are just like, oh, we're so excited to be here. And, you know, the kids are going nuts. And it's fantastic. And honestly, you know, you might have, you know, people have problems with front desk all the time or their hotels or whatever, but we genuinely wanted people to have the best time they could have, the most magical time they could have. And we definitely, even though we weren't, you know, Disney, we went above and beyond to take care of them. And my visa was a year and a half, 18 months. I was not happy to leave, but I had to. I left in February 2008. I've been back loads of times since. To see Wishes load up, you know. I take a video as well so I can watch it whenever I need a little Wishes pick me up. But it's honestly the best thing I ever did, ever. And I wanted to do the international program, but actually, since I went out there and I did that, I realized that the international program actually really wasn't for me, because I was about 24 when I went out, and they're much younger. They're kind of 18, 19, which is a big difference. When you're that age and they're like partying all the time and stuff, and like, you know, I wanted sort of a real life. I wanted my own apartment and everything else. And of course, then I was only an hour from Kennedy Space Center, which is my like second favorite place on earth. So all in all, it was a wonderful experience, and I really recommend it to people. A lot of people don't seem to know that you can go and work, and you don't have to work directly for Disney, which means you can make a bit more money. And we did get our hospitality passes, so we had one entry each year. And the thing is, everyone knows someone who's a cast member, so, you know, they can sign you in or whatever. So, like, we had plenty of experiences. And it really was so worthwhile. So I'd recommend, if you know anyone who is even remotely interested in going to do it, Yummy Jobs are based in London. You can either be in college or you can have experience in the hospitality industry. But it really was a fantastic, fantastic experience, and I'll treasure the memories forever. So, does anyone have any questions? None at all? Sorry? Well, I haven't given away. I haven't mentioned. The thing about the book as well is that a lot of people think it's, you know, going to be all, like, there's a lot of stuff in there. What it's really about is it's about what happens when you move 4,000 miles away and you don't do any preparation for moving 4,000 miles away. That's what it's about. I'm selling copies today. I'm charging £5 for them. So they're actually £9. So if you buy one, please write a review or something. I just really don't want to bring them back on the plane. It's also the new, I have the old one here, but it's the new one that has lovely, a new back cover. Ooh. And some pictures inside. And then there's postcards here, very good. Postcards here, which you can just take. I didn't realize they were so big. Okay. I'm sorry. No, it doesn't. And it doesn't come with the excitement implied by the music either. Disclaimer there. Okay, so thank you.
Thank you, Catherine.
Genuinely, if you have not read the book, you have to. It is brilliant from start to end. How anybody can illegally drive to Kennedy Space Center and not get caught. If you've not got that far yet, it's brilliant. And just some of the anecdotes, your foreign language speaking housemates and parties and everything. It is genuinely funny from page to page. So please do collect your copies and get one for £5. If you get two, it's nearly like buy one, get one free. Well, I sold it enough now. Okay, that rounds everything up for this morning. It is now lunchtime. We've got about an hour for lunch. So if you want to, I think I'm right in saying that, aren't I? Yes, I am. It's lunchtime. You can enjoy your lunch. We're coming back for Who Wants to Be Millionaire or Millionaire at 1:45. So we've got sort of an hour and 10 minutes for lunch. Don't forget, all of the bits and pieces are still out over there. Pin trading is going mad next door, so don't miss that. We've got the silent auction stuff. There is new stuff appearing on there all the time. See you after lunch.
Columbus Vacation Villas, Central Florida Vacation Home Rentals and Property Management Services. If you are looking for your perfect vacation villa, get in touch with this friendly family-run business, which will go out of their way to make sure your vacation of a lifetime is just that. If you already own a villa in Orlando, then let Columbus take care of everything whilst you are away, giving you complete peace of mind. Check out www.columbus-vacations.com and discover a new world.
They are the elite. Drivers confronting the most punishing conditions. They are the new breed of test driver. Mercilessly putting cars through their paces. Who are these masters of the road? Test Track at Epcot. See if you've got what it takes.
Lovely lunch. Yes, no. Or some people in this room, have you all had a lovely two lunches or three, whatever that was? How did you? I didn't say I was talking to you. Right, welcome to Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? See what we've done there? Took ages to come up with that. It is basically Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, where we've got a series of questions. We've got we're going to go through those questions. Each of them give you points. Each point give you a better prize. If you're really, really rubbish at this, you're going to get a really, really rubbish prize. If you're really, really good at this, you're going to get a not-so-rubbish prize. A 100-point prize is, I think, an emergency poncho, is it not? Hey, come on. Which then gives people the opportunity to throw things over you because you've got a poncho to do it with, so that's fine. We've got four quizzes in total. We've got three adult ones, and we've got one for the kids, and all of you kids are coming up to take part in that one. You have no choice. You're all coming up together because apparently safety in numbers. It's all fine. You can get it sorted if you're all there. So it basically, as I've said, works in exactly the same way. Dead easy. So we need an adult volunteer to start off with who's going to come and give this a go. Who fancies it? Oh, man. I love this. This is like being at Disney World and sitting in the audience of Indiana Jones. And there's that one person who literally is about to hurt themselves because they're jumping in the air so far. Who is going to be that guy? Yeah. Laura, you had your hand up first. So come on out. Give a round of applause. Hit the complete. Hit the compete. Hit the compete. Amateurs. Anyway, here we go. Right. This is Millionaires for Schools. We're back at school. Yeah, here we are. Right, okay. This is question number one. Okay. Hard one, I know. Question number one is this then. What type of vehicle travels the perimeter of the Magic Kingdom? Now, you've got your three lifelines. You've got your 50-50, your phone a friend, and the ask the audience. We're not going to ask these lot because they didn't volunteer. So they don't know anything, so that's no use. So do you want to use them, or do you think you know the answer?
No, I think I know the answer.
Go on then, what is it?
E.
You go for A, train. Final answer.
Yeah.
Go on then, A, train. Yeah, well done, okay. So... if nothing else, you are leaving here with an emergency poncho. Come on. Right, question number two then. What is the biggest theme park in Walt Disney World? The biggest theme park. Now, define biggest. We're going for landmass-wise. Which of these is the biggest? Now, you can use a lifeline if you want to.
I'll use 50-50.
You're going
50-50. I think I know, but
okay, 50-50. Computer, take away one of the wrong answers. Two of the wrong answers. I've always wanted to say that and I got it wrong. Okay, your two are Epcot or Animal Kingdom?
B, Animal Kingdom.
Tension. Final answer?
Yeah.
Yep, well done. Okay, she's at 1,000 points, which means you get at least two emergency ponchos. We've only got emergency ponchos, that's it. Okay, question three. On which attraction might you find adverts for missing persons such as Eileen Dover and Anne Fellin? Any ideas?
I've never been on A or D.
So it's A, Soaring, B, It's a Small World, C, Pirates of the Caribbean, or D, Jungle Cruise. Eileen Dover and Anne Fellin.
Either the one of friend or ask the audience, whichever.
Which one do you want to use?
Ask the audience.
You're going to ask the audience. Sorry, we're not asking you. We're asking the computer. So, Craig, can you click on the ask the audience? Let's see what the audience says. Oh. It says... D. Jungle Cruise. Seems to be the popular answer.
D.
Okay, D. Right. That's it, that one there. Go then, Deke Jungle Cruise. Definitely final answer, you're 100% sure. You're
yep.
Not. It could be Pirates of the Caribbean. Think of the humour.
I'm always going that. I'm not
you're always going that. It's a small world. Eileen
no,
Dover.
Definitely not. It's a small
from
world.
Holland. No. Holland. I should have thought this through before I'd done it, shouldn't I?
Jungle Cruise.
Right, Jungle Cruise. Oh. Yes, it is Jungle Cruise. Well done. Find it in the queue, along with lots of other silly things. Right, here we go. Next question. This one for 4,000 points. No, 5,000 points. Name the hill you drop down at the end of Splash Mountain. Is it A, Dead Drop, B, Chicopin Hill, C, Western Waterfall, or D, Tumbleweed Falls? Which one of these is the one that you drop down?
I've got no idea, but I'll go for D.
You're going for D, Tumbleweed yeah. Falls. Okay. Final answer. Bearing in mind, you've still got phone a friend you could use that might help you.
Yeah. That's okay. I quite like the poncho idea, so I'll go for
You're going for Tumbleweed Falls. Okay. Is she correct? Oh, and lucky, it's Chicopin Hill. That means you go away with 1,000 points. Craig's going to get your prize. Go and see him. Give a round of applause. There you go, that pretty much rounds up this edition of the show. Thank you to our sponsors, Columbus Vacation Village. You can find out more about them at columbus-vacation.com. Thanks to Juz and Craig for joining me.
Always a pleasure, never a chore.
I should have said never a chore, you could have been the pleasure.
Oh, you could. That just sounds so wrong. But just to let you know, all of you who listen to the show, we had those regular segments that we have been doing. We've done it around the world in 80 segments. We've been doing Disney Island Discs. Disney Island Discs is returning on the next edition of the show, and we're going to be having a listener's Disney Island Discs as well, so check out that when that comes out in episode 71, that'll be. Thanks to Catherine Ryan Howard coming on to Mouse Meets. You can find her book at mousetrappedbook.com. There's loads of extra stories over there as well as videos and things like that. You can go and check them out. Do pick up that book if you haven't. It's a brilliant book. Make sure to email us your questions, comments, suggestions, podcast@disneybrit.com. You can also ring our voicemail numbers on 0121 288 2858 in Europe and in the US.
407-545-7980.
You can check out our website, disneybrit.com, where we're always updating the latest news, rumours, all those bits and pieces over there, as well as our blog articles. You can also find us on Facebook, got our Disney Brit fan page over there. You can also friend myself, Juz, and Craig. And don't forget, Mouse Mag is on its way. The third edition of Mouse Mag will be out at the beginning of July. You can find that over at magcloud.com. There's going to be some great new articles in there for you to enjoy, so do make sure you check out Mouse Mag and download issue 1 and 2 if you haven't already. You can do that either via the website's PDF, but you can also download the MagCloud app for iPad, so you can download it straight to your iPad as well. Leave us a review on iTunes. Thank you to those of you who have. You can also find our new YouTube channel, which is Disney Brit Podcast. There's loads of stuff over there. We've got some videos from the Magical Moments Festival over at Disneyland Paris. You'll find the video which shows you all the different elements that are going on. Also, there's a video of Mickey's Magical Celebration Show that goes on each evening as well. If you've not had enough of us yet, you can still listen to us on heartbeatradiousa.com on Friday evenings, where we do both the Eye on Orlando radio show and the Destination Disney radio show as well. If you don't want to listen to them live, you can download them from iTunes, and you can also find them on eyeonorlando.com and on destinationd.info. Also, don't forget to head over to our social media site for Disney fans, discot.net. It's still ever growing. And that's pretty much it. Until one last thing to tell you, the next show will be Wednesday, the 6th of July. Until then, we'll see you.